I'm George Knapp, in for George Norrie, ready to open up the phone lines and get a little crazy. Hope you got some great questions and great topics. When we come back, we're jumping right into it here on Coast to Coast AM. By the way, my thanks to all of the listeners who sent me information about the price of gas in Saudi Arabia. The lowest estimate I saw was 49 cents a gallon, and I saw another one that was 61 cents, and then looks like the prevailing rate right now, 91 cents a gallon. Pretty good deal there for those Saudi drivers. Going to the phones, east of the Rockies, Marty in Cleveland, Ohio. Good morning, Marty.
Hi, George. Just two quick questions for you. What is your recollections of the Pepcon explosion, and whatever happened to your weatherman, Bob Walsh? That goes back to 81 to 91 when I was there.
Yeah, well, Pepcon explosion happened. It was a gigantic explosion at a plant that produced ammonium perchlorate, I think it was, and it rocked the entire valley, killed a couple of people. A couple of folks caught it on video. I was outside in my front yard, and it shook me. I was probably 5 miles away, and it shook the house and broke a lot of windows, and it was an incredibly unnerving experience. Go ahead.
I was at home trapping near Boulder Highway, and the second explosion, the big one, knocked me over, blew the window out, and knocked me over the bed.
Yeah, it was.
That's at least 5 miles.
It was a disaster. As for explosive situations, I guess we could use the same words to describe Bob Walsh. He was a good friend of mine. He was the weatherman. He and I, when we were both young broadcasters, co-anchored the noon newscast at KLAS-TV. I was the news guy. He's the weather guy.
Absolutely.
And Bob was so clever and so funny. We'd get into all this trouble. I mean, almost daily we'd get called into the news director's office because in the segue, in between the happy talk, in between weather and news, we kept expanding it to 2 and 3 minutes where we'd talk about tabloid stories, the incredible wrestling cheese, whatever kind
His
of crazy
high
thing.
School.
Bob, no, this is...
No, he used to talk all the time about St. Ed's here in Cleveland.
Yeah. He would tell me about the Terminal Tower and all kinds of landmarks in Cleveland. Bob was from Cleveland. He went on to work in government. He's now the Assistant Secretary of State for the state of Nevada.
Good heavens.
Yeah.
From Weatherman to, wow.
And doing a great job, too.
And I remember, I think it was 2 or 3 days after the Pepcon explosion, they were selling T-shirts on Fremont with the skyline of Vegas with a mushroom cloud, and it said, "I survived Pepcon."
Well, Las Vegas is a bastion of free enterprise. We sold postcards and T-shirts about regarding nuclear explosions back in the day as well.
Right.
Marty, thank you for the call. Bob Walsh will be thrilled to hear that he has fans out there. Thank you. West of the Rockies, Jeff in Culver City, California. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, George. Welcome back, man. Yeah, I just wanted to comment on the sky drones, you know, possibly reading people's minds while they're on the ground trying to see how they think. All of these current technologies, to me, man, are obviously designed to try and see how and what people think. Because right now the corporate world is busy, you know, befriending everyone on Facebook and Twitter, advertising their products. But there's a problem as it comes, like, to the government with the problem of time. Even if they could possibly do that, George, they still couldn't be able to pinpoint the time, whether it be seconds, like nanoseconds, the day, the hour, the month, a year, or years. So they'll always have a problem with time and to see how accurate it could be, you know, as it relates to time. And I want to know what you think about the sky drones possibly doing that now or in the future.
Well, I'm deeply disturbed by it, Jeff. The reference, by the way, for those listeners who weren't with us in the first hour, is we have an article that we posted on the Coast to Coast website about a possible use for predator drones, that they will be given a technological capability to essentially read people's minds from the sky.
Right.
And while you could see all kinds of legitimate uses for that in the theater, in wars, and in hostile areas, you also know that when you develop a technology like that, inevitably it will be used here at home. That's
right.
The part that bothers me.
Yeah, exactly.
Is that, you know, I've read a great deal about technological breakthroughs in mapping the brain, about the possibility that some would be able to install equipment at an airport and figure out, as people go through the machine, why they're there.
But people what about who the what about the time problem? Like, you could never know exactly. Like, see, even if they was going through there and trying to say if they possibly had something they shouldn't have had, they wouldn't know exactly where or when that they would possibly try to do something, right?
Yeah, and so that, you have to wonder, could you they arrest you based on how they read your mind because of something you're thinking about? It brings me back to the Spielberg movie. What was the one with Tom Cruise in it where he's a cop that stops people from committing murders?
Yeah, I can't think of the name. Yeah,
Minority Report.
Minority Report, right, yeah.
Right.
I just wanted to say that, though.
Yeah, I appreciate the call, Jeff. Okay. Yeah, that technology scares me, and it is fraught with peril on many levels. First-time caller Daniel in Ohio. Good morning, Daniel.
Hey, George.
How's it going?
Hey, how's it going? Hey, I just wanted to comment real quick on the cold fusion. I know it's open lines, but
sure.
I don't know if they actually kind of brought to your attention. What it does is it generates heat. Basically, how it creates energy is it's like nuclear. If you're familiar with how nuclear power works, it creates massive amounts of heat, and that's where they kept saying, you know, energy, and you're like, what does that mean? it's creating massive amounts of heat. Thus would make, you know, just like a steam engine or whatever, but it was non-radioactive. That's why they called it cold fusion. It wasn't dangerous to be around. It just couldn't contain, you know, it from melting down because it got so hot.
Yeah, I understood that it produces more energy than goes into it. I just couldn't understand what the process was, why it did that. You know, I understand a little bit about the fission reaction and how that operates. I just didn't understand the mechanics of it, of why it did that. So that's why I kept asking.
Right. And as far as energy goes, I mean, the government of the powers that be will continue to suppress anything that works. I mean, I know that it does work. And they talk about you know, wanting to save the planet and wanting to go green. But if you really think about it, if they really wanted to do that, solar is a proven technology. I mean, I think we can all agree, somebody wants to spend 25 grand, 30 grand, they can pretty much convert their house over. But if you look at the numbers, if the federal government would spend about, I'm going to say, $80 billion, they could provide solar to about 60% of the United States that need it. And that's about how much BP spent to clean up the oil.
Well, you're talking to a guy who lives at what it announced to ground zero for solar energy. You know, we have so much sunshine here in Nevada and in the desert.
Exactly.
People look at the desert. About 85% of our state is federal land, federally owned BLM land or other kinds of federally controlled land. So you would think it would be easy to jump over some of the hoops that you need to jump over to build something like this, but it's not. It's sort of an interesting dichotomy, Daniel, is that environmentalists have pushed for cleaner energy and with very good reason because of problems with coal and problems with gas and nuclear and concerns about all of the above. And so they've pushed the idea of wind and solar. But when it comes right down to it, when you start looking at a particular piece of land where you want to build a great big solar farm, you get a lot of objections from environmental people who worry, well, what happens to that land? What happens to the critters that live there, the endangered species, rare plants? I think we're going to see as solar plants and projects of a large scale move forward over the next couple of years, especially here in Nevada, there will be a large amount of noise coming from the environmental community that doesn't want these things built.
But look what we do. We cut the rainforest down, and if we want to, you know, wipe off a country, you know, we'll take it out. And they use the excuse of activists and lobbyists for reasons to not do things. We do whatever we want.
Yeah.
But I mean, $25,000 per household. That's if a professional installs it. You've got these kits now where people can make it themselves, and the government could work out a deal if they actually wanted it to be done. But they don't. They don't.
So, well, I agree with you. I don't think the power companies want to just legislate themselves out of business. They have incentives for people to put solar units on their house, and then you sell any excess power, it goes back to the power company. But I don't think they ever want to see the day when everybody, every house, every roof is basically its own power plant.
No, because and that's why they want to keep the cost high. Because, see, like, you know, $25,000, most people aren't going to spend that in a 30-year period in electricity. Most people, you know, it'd take a long time for it to pay for itself. So they're like, hey, good, we'll keep it at that price, and no one's going to be able to, you know, they're not going to want it unless they're 19 years old and they're building a brand new house. But you make it, that's why you make those things affordable, so that they could be. I mean, look at all the money they put into things. I mean, I can buy an LCD TV, which has hundreds of hours of R&D and technology into it, and it's you know, $50. So
yeah, well, I'm right there with you. I've looked at solar for my own house. I mean, here in Las Vegas, I mean, it's not unusual to have $400 to $600 air conditioning bills in the summer months. So it's the kind of thing that could pay off.
But
right now, it doesn't work. It doesn't work financially, at least not for me anyway. It would be nice, however, the other aspect of it is to have your own kind of a power system in case the grid goes down. And it's various scenarios why that might happen that have been discussed here on Coast to Coast. But we'll save that for another time. Daniel, I appreciate the call. Thanks very much. Wildcard Line, Alex in Princeton, Minnesota. What's on your mind, Alex? Alec?
Hi. I have an interesting ghost story. I don't know if any one of the listeners has ever heard of something like this, so I'm hoping to get some feedback. But it's I know it's going to sound sketchy off the bat. It's through a friend of a friend. I'll just call him Tyler because he doesn't like to talk about it too much. But basically what happened was that he moved into this house with his parents, his brand-new house, built it themselves type of deal. This is a while ago. He's quite a bit older than I am. But anyway, move into this house, and all of a sudden he wakes up in the middle of the night and just, you know, gets that feeling like something's watching him. So he rolls over and looks over towards his closet, and he sees, like, a little boy sitting there looking at him of some kind. I don't remember if he said it was translucent, but he definitely, he called it a ghost originally. And he's sitting there staring at it, and, you know, it's kind of, you know, it's, you know, it's weird. He's, like, wondering what the heck's going on. And all of a sudden he said, like, the boy got up and changed. It morphed into a full-grown man and then just walked back into his closet and disappeared. And he rolled over, checked the time. He was wide awake, you know, pinched himself the whole deal. And I've never heard of anything like this. I mean, I've listened to the show for many, many years. I'm only 18, but some of my earliest radio memories are listening to Coast at night. And I've never heard of anything. I mean, I've heard of shadow people. I've heard of poltergeists, you know, everything else, but I've never heard of something like that. Have you, or where, got any ideas on where I should go do a little research on something like this?
I have not heard that. You know, you hear stories about ghosts that are kind of ethereal. They're not, the outlines of their figures are not all that well defined. So they might change general shapes, but I've never heard of one changing an age in the single encounter. That's for sure.
Yeah.
But well, I'll tell you what, now you've put it out there, we'll put the question to our listeners and see if there's anybody else listening tonight who wants to try to call in and tell us whether they have any input into having a similar experience or not. Alec, I appreciate the call. Thanks very much. Cool story.
Yep.
Wildcard Line, Mike in Buffalo, New York. Good morning, Mike.
Earlier in the cold fusion program, I was going to call in because about the guy, Frank Nadarczyk, but somebody had beat me to it. But he really didn't cover what Nadarczyk discovered. And Nadarczyk actually came up with an explanation using math, you know, to support cold fusion and why it takes place.
Do you know enough about it to tell us?
Actually, I mean, no, it takes entirely too long to try and explain it. But the gentleman's name is Nadarczyk. It's spelled Z-N-I-D-A-R-S-I-C. And he's got a paper called The Control of Natural Forces. And you can find it on the Internet. It's listed on Scribe. But, yeah, you know, even Stanley or Pons and Fleischmann, you know, didn't actually understand the process themselves. And so, I mean, where Nadarczyk comes in, he actually uses mathematical equations to quantify the problem and explain why it's happening, not just, you know, no one really understood why it was happening. And now with his, you know, with his mathematical formulas, which he uses, you know, Planck's constant and some of Einstein's theories, to explain it, it really makes sense. So, I mean, if someone wants to really look into it, that's what you want to know about Nadarsik. The other caller didn't really cover that. I didn't understand, you know, why he didn't go into that. But, you know, if you want a real good explanation of why it happens, you know, there's also videos on YouTube. There's like a 21-series video that explains it as well.
Is this guy's paper something that we laymen could understand?
Yeah, most likely. I mean, it is in, you know, kind of hard, you know, I don't know. Yes, you could probably understand it. It's just that, some of the math behind it is probably a little complicated, but, the videos would probably be more suited to someone than actually reading the paper. But, after you read the paper and then watch the videos, you get a better understanding for it. But if you don't have any, you know, background in math, then it'd probably be a little over your head.
Okay. Well, I appreciate the tip, Mike. Appreciate it. And anybody wants to look for that, I've got the spelling of the guy's name. If you didn't get it, we'll put it on the website. You know, the stuff that I read today in preparing for the show, you know, it's easy to bash big science and mainstream science for being too conservative and circling the wagons when something outrageous like this comes up. But they had good reasons, I think, for being skeptical in the beginning. As mentioned, the two scientists who announced this this breakthrough didn't understand how it worked themselves. They were chemists who were dealing with a physics problem and couldn't explain it to their colleagues, which would explain why a lot of folks would have serious questions about it. Trying to get one more call in. Armin in Glendale, California. Armin, I'll just tell you to hang on to the phone lines if we have to finish when the music starts, and I'll pick you up after the break. Go ahead.
All right, sure.
What's on your mind?
All right. Hey, George. I'd just like to see your thoughts about the Marfa lights in Marfa, Texas, the unexplainable phenomena. I'd just like to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, I wish I knew. I wish I could tell you something definitive. I've read about those over the years. I've heard people allege that it might have something to do with extraterrestrials or UFOs, and I don't see any kind of connection there. Seems to me more of a natural phenomena, but I've never heard a good, thorough explanation of it. Sometimes you see them, sometimes you don't. It's never been really explained to me. Do you have a theory?
Well, it just seems like some kind of, you know, just UFO phenomena to me. You know, it's been said that it's been like, you know, automobile lights, but you know, the way the lights move and all that, it doesn't seem like anything natural to me, you know?
Well, nothing natural that we understand. To my knowledge, no one has seen any distinct craft kind of vehicles. It's just lights as opposed to flying saucers or anything like that. Am I wrong?
No, yeah, you're right. I just wanted to hear your thoughts about it.
Have you seen them yourself? Ever seen them?
No, but I've been. It would be nice to go check it out.
Well, I'd love to hear from people in the audience that may have seen those or any other theories. I mean, Armin, you've never heard any evidence of people seeing beings or anything like that.
No, but what I've heard about is there's actual like a watch post that people go and they just see it, but they don't know absolutely. You know, they don't know what it is, and it's just really weird to me.
Well, that's kind of a predictable reaction from the public. You got a hot spot like that. Of course, people go out and have fun and see it for themselves. Same thing happened here at Area 51 when the stories broke in the late 80s about strange craft and UFO-type craft being seen in the skies. People started camping out. It's, you know, 20-some years later, and people are still going out there to look and see what they can see. Ditto for Skinwalker Ranch in Utah. Appreciate all the calls. We'll get back to the phones right after this. Mitch Ryder and the Detroit Wheels taking us into the break on Coast to Coast AM. I'm George Knapp in for George Norrie. A lot of folks on the phones. The phone lines are pretty full. We'll get right back to them and see what's on your mind right after this on Coast to Coast AM. I'm George Knapp in for George Norrie. The phone lines are full. We're going to see what's on your mind right now. Wildcard line, Mike in Burbank. Hi, Mike.
What's up, George? How's it going?
Okay. How you doing?
All right. I just want to get your thoughts on ayahuasca, the drink in South America, and if you guys are ever going to do a show about it.
Well, we did a show about it. I had a guy on some months ago. They call him the Gringo Shaman of the Amazon. Ron Wheeler, I think his name was. Very interesting guy who explained some of the properties and some of the healing benefits of ayahuasca. I know some people who have tried it themselves and speak very highly of it. I will confide in you that there was a group that had an experience with it here in Las Vegas in the last couple of months, and I was invited to participate. But I'm just, I don't know, in my older age, am I a little wary about those kind of situations? I think I'm more wary about the social setting than I would be about the potential effects. But have read a little bit about it, have interviewed people about it, and have heard amazing things. Have you tried it?
No, I'm thinking about trying it. I've heard about people seeing sacred geometry and, you know, some kind of ETs and all that, and that sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, the most amazing things I've heard are about healing effects, and I don't know if those are long-term healing effects or just short-term, but that it's helped a lot of people with physical problems. And I don't know if that's been scientifically validated or anything, but at least person-to-person stories, they say it works.
Yeah, I've heard about that too. Drug addictions, Parkinson's, all kinds of stuff. Can you tell me when the show was about the ayahuasca?
I would guess around October or November. It might have been further back. It might have been last fall. But we can look that up. You can go to the website. The guy's name was the Gringo Shaman, and I think his name was Ron Wheeler or Ron Wheelock. But if you look up Gringo Shaman of the Amazon, I'm sure you can find a link to Coast to Coast and see what the date was for that program. Here's what I don't know, Mike, and I don't know if you know either. I don't know what the legalities of ayahuasca are. I don't know if it's legal in this country. I know it's legal down there in the Amazon, but I'm not sure I think it's separate plants that get mixed into this pot, and separately they're legal, but I'm not sure about when they get mixed all together, whether it's a controlled substance or not.
Yeah, I've seen some websites. They seem kind of shady, but I think you could order the vines online. They come from, I don't know what country they come from, but I heard it's really hard to get it through customs.
Well, I'd be real careful with that. I think it's the kind of thing you want to guide somebody that's experienced with that before you do that yourself sitting in your room or something. Now, that could be a pretty dangerous stuff. Thank you for the call. I appreciate it. Going to Heather in Cambridge City, Indiana on the wild card line. Hi, Heather. Good morning.
Hi, how are you guys doing on this wonderful stormy evening?
It's not stormy here, but I guess it is there, huh? Pretty bad?
Yes, it is. I wanted to get you guys' thoughts. I was wondering if everyone has entertained the thought of each race on Earth having their individual alien creator. And perhaps those alien creators are placing bets on who will survive, who will dominate in the end.
Well, that is an odd, weird thought, Heather. But I like the way your brain works.
I've never heard
anything like that. I can't imagine aliens gambling on something like that. And I would say
would
that
awesome.
In general, that each race is more similar than it is dissimilar. That we're all pretty much the same under the skin.
Yes.
Do you agree?
Yes, I do. But that would be awesome, wouldn't it not?
Yeah, I suspect that, scientists could tell us that the reason different races evolved is different environments, different parts of the planet where they grew up, where they evolved over millions of years. That's the difference as opposed to aliens intervening, but it's an interesting concept.
Well, thank you very much.
Okay. Heather, you stay careful there on that bad weather. George in Hesperia, California on the wild card line. Good morning, George.
Good morning, George. Hey, I just wanted to compliment you on that great book, The Hunt for the Skinwalker Ranch.
Thank you.
That is just superb. It's an excellent read. I've read it four times. And I was just wondering, maybe you could make a movie out of that for the Coast to Coast audience. That would be just what they're looking for.
Well, there's been a lot of discussion of that. I mean, it's a kind of a normal thing when you have a book that sells that movie producers come calling. And I think we had inquiries to the publisher before the book even came out. The rights were sold. Where that stands, I don't know. I've been told different things about that project and many others over the years, but I have learned that you don't believe anything anyone from Hollywood ever tells you.
Right.
So if anybody, I think it would make a great movie. It's kind of a spooky story. It's sort of like the story of Poltergeist, you know, in a way. A family is terrorized by forces of the unknown, and then a team of scientists comes in to kind of help them. And in the end, you don't know what the heck really happened, and that's really what the story was with the Skinwalker Ranch. I wish that the activity level had continued and that the study by the NIDS guys, the National Institute of Discovery Science, had also continued. But I think the phenomenon, as you've, if you've read the book four times, you know, it sort of didn't like the whole dynamic changing, where while it was in control terrorizing people, it was quite comfortable doing that and confusing people and staying one step ahead of the people who lived on the property. But once the dynamic changed, when scientists were there stalking this phenomena, whatever it was, it sort of went underground, went away. We have since had stories about similar paranormal hotspots around the country, Yakima, Washington, some in New Mexico, another near Sedona, Arizona, but nothing quite like the ranch in northeastern Utah.
Right. The special effects for that movie would just have to be outrageous, because what you described and the way you described it was just excellent. And again, I want to thank you for that. And one more question.
Sure.
Has there been any update to the Phoenix Light situation as far as being able to tell how big this craft was, or if there was an actual solid craft or many different crafts?
Well, it's kind of confusing, and I get confused about it myself, because there was more than one incident that's referred to as the Phoenix Lights. There have been some updates, but mostly it's a regurgitation and a refinement of information that's been out there in the public arena for a long time. It certainly did appear to be a structured craft, because as I recall from some of the witness reports, is that it blacked out the stars behind it at times. Contrary to some reports, the best information suggests that the thing was here in southern Nevada and then went to Phoenix, as opposed to the other way around. It was spotted here hours before witnesses in Phoenix saw it. I think it's an excellent case. I'm not convinced that it's extraterrestrial. I think it could very well be something that we built, although it'd be one heck of a big aircraft. There have been, as you probably know, a lot of reports of these giant floating and flying triangles all over the United States and probably all over the world, in particular in association with highways and military bases, which suggests that it might be something that we built as opposed to someone else out there. Fact is, we just don't have enough information. I think the most interesting part of the whole Phoenix Light story is the government response, or lack thereof. First saying that, no, we had nothing to gear. You know, it's not ours, denying that they know anything about it. And then later coming up with this lame excuse that there were some guys training with flares in the general area. It suggests that something else might have been going on there, that they were just trying to muddy the water, which is usually what the government and the military do when it comes to any of these UFO cases. Do you have any information about it?
No, I don't. I've just been, you know, kind of baffled by it, because I know there is somebody out there who's been filming other lights in that area, a lady doctor. I can't recall her name.
Oh, and, Lynn Katai, maybe? Lynn Katai?
Yes, that's her. Yep. And it's very interesting that they can't actually get a structured craft outline or you know, something that's really tangible to define it as either or, ours or theirs. So, okay, well, you answered my questions, and again, I want to just thank you for that great book you wrote.
Sure thing. Appreciate it. Thanks, okay. George. Wildcard line, Ken in Bridgewater, South Dakota. Good morning, Ken. How you doing?
George, I used to be in Seattle, but I have some information on regard to some of the pioneers of cold fusion, such as Wayne Green, started the Cold Fusion magazine 10, 15 years ago and published about six big issues. Got great reports from all the scientists, and then found out how they were being suppressed. And then he hired Eugene Mallov, who edited it for a while, and then he got on Coast to Coast and talked about it. But he made the mistake of petitioning or trying to get Congress to do something about it, because he was bludgeoned to death. And it's one of these deaths where they never were able to find who done it, like the CIA, Mafia, oil company, if you know what I mean. Were you familiar with that background?
I was not familiar with it until tonight. We had several of our listeners sent me notes and emails about Ken Mallov. Is that here, or Eugene Mallov?
Mallov.
And
I sent one earlier, you know, myself.
So he was on the program talking about the benefits of cold fusion and saying that it's just around the corner. And the next thing you know, he was murdered.
Yes. It's those deaths that they never were able to find out who did it, if you know what I mean.
It's still unsolved, huh?
Well, sure. It will remain so because of who did it. Anyhow, on this bit about cold fusion being a dead end, In more, it is in more professionally in more ways than one.
Well, it was for him. That's a sad story.
Lisa should get Wayne back on because you know he's still active and he'll hear about all this. And
that's a good idea. I'll pass that on to her. I appreciate the call. Thanks very much, Ken.
Yep, thank you.
We're going now to Johnny in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Hi, Johnny. How you doing?
Good, George. How are you doing?
Okay.
Hey, I just want to tell you briefly. Last Sunday, that was a phenomenal show. It was so holistically keen. I mean, the guests, the content, the dialogue, and I'm talking about the tabloid program.
Paul Bannister.
Yes, and it was absolutely wonderful. I mean, and all of these pieces seem to go so well together. And as a whole, it is the first time, I think I've said in a while, that it was exciting as hell. And I thank you.
Well, thank you. I thought Paul Bannister was a great guest. His book was just excellent. It was, if I didn't say it enough, I mean, it's just hilarious. He has a very funny, clever, witty writing style, very British, dry wit, and it was a very fun read. The insight he gave into life at the National Enquirer was great. The stories about the publisher were excellent. What I didn't know until tonight is that I saw that Ian Punnett had the son of the publisher who came on, I guess, sometime in last year to tell stories about his father and how the mob had financed the mob had financed the National Enquirer, which is a pretty interesting connection if you think about all the connections between mobsters and the U.S. intelligence agencies over the years.
Yes, absolutely. Well, George, I'm having a little bit of an issue now.
Okay.
This program, I said, it really reached out to me. It was a spectacular few hours of radio. In regard to journalism, I like what you do. And I think this is something that I would enjoy, something that I would be good at. It's so interdisciplinary, and I like the idea of just providing significant information to people. My problem is, I just completed a 4-year degree. I know you have a very broad familiarity, very expansive with the whole field of journalism. Is there anything I can do?
What's your degree in?
Construction management.
Well, you're a long way from journalism.
Is it possible to be a freelance writer anymore? I mean, is this something? I mean, this really piqued my interest.
Well, here's the thing to keep in mind is that journalism now is much different from what was even 10 years ago, and that the new technologies, computer abilities, and Twitter and Facebook has basically given anyone the power to be a journalist, to blog, to write about things that mean something to you. I would start with writing about what you know, the construction management business, and sort of expand it in a way that it would reach out and interest a larger audience. I'll tell you this, is that it's not possible to break into television and radio anymore unless you have a degree in television and radio. Mm-hmm. I did not when I started, but that was a long time ago. And it is a very rewarding profession. It sometimes is frustrating for those of us who are in the business, investigative reporters like myself, who you think you're trying to do good for the public and represent the public's interest against the big bad guys in government. And then you find yourself down there in the pit of public disapproval along with the lawyers and used car salesmen or something. People get mad at people in my line of work. A lot of times there's good reason for that, but not good reason to disparage the entire profession. I will tell you this, is that while it is also very rewarding, both in a personal and professional and sometimes in a financial sense, it's also hard work. You know, get so many emails from coast-to-coast listeners about this show, and people will say, well, this is my favorite host, or that's my favorite host, and I don't like this one, or I do like that one. I'll tell you what, it's a lot harder job than it sounds. That writing herd on this program is not easy. Preparing for it, needing to have a broad sense of information about a broad range of topics, that the kind of things that George Norrie does every night, that Ian Punnett does on a regular basis. And I'll tell you, 4 hours a night gobbles up a lot of material. 4 hours a night, seven nights a week, it is a lot of material for people like George and Ian to stay at it for as long as they did, and Art Bell before them. It's an amazing accomplishment to be at the top of your game year after year, and make the program a success. So the longer I do it, and I'm still learning about this radio stuff, the longer I do it, the more respect I have for those guys.
Even, I know, even, you know, the radio, the interview process, like, I know the way that you or George, you know, you engage the guest, you know what I mean? It's almost like an art, you would say, behind it, you know, eliciting, you know, particular questions or guiding an interview. It's really kind of magical. As far as construction, I mean, if I'm going to, you know, I'm going to work hard either way. But I feel like with journalism, it's changing people's lives rather than just making a dollar for somebody else's life, you know?
Well, that's true. And I'll tell you, there's something called ProPublica right now that is now the first sort of online nonprofit journalism organization. They're doing some great work. I think they just won a Pulitzer, the first online news organization to win a Pulitzer a week or so ago. And basically have public service and good journalism at the heart of what they do, as opposed to a paycheck and helping a corporate media conglomerate make a bunch of money. John, I would start with the blogging. Write about what you know. Write about it in short chunks. Get a handle on what kinds of techniques work and what interests the public, and take it from there. As I said, technology has allowed all of us to be journalists to one degree or another. Doesn't mean all of us are good journalists, however. It's still a lot of hard work. Thanks for the call. Try to get one more in real quick. Mike in San Francisco on the west of the Rockies. Tell you what, Mike, if we can't get through this, I'll ask you to hang on till after the break, okay?
Oh, George, thank you.
Okay.
I wanted to get your take on this and then maybe suggest a show to you.
Sure.
Recent release of papers from the CIA involving Kennedy and his interest in UFOs. Are you familiar with that? You're familiar about all that, right?
I am.
And it's funny that there's been a few things on this show, comments made about it, but you would think that a whole show would be devoted to it almost at once. I don't know that I believe in UFOs or whatever, but the whole thing is kind of interesting to me, and also that the Kennedy thing is actually more interesting to me. And I thought that, you know, Jim Mars and I don't remember Mr. Barber's first name, the two fellows you had on recently who were kind of Kennedy experts. And I think that didn't they bring that up, or wasn't there some talk of that?
John Barber, John, the last time I, yeah.
Yeah. Wasn't there some talk of that documentation when you had them on? This is before the CIA's release. No, there wasn't.
Not to my knowledge. I mean, Jim Mars has talked about a possible JFK CIA connection, UFO connection for a long time. But I don't think he had these documents. I don't think he was aware of them. However, I'll ask you to hold on. We'll explore that a little bit more. Mike in San Francisco, when we come back, need to take a break right now. I'll be back with more of your calls on Coast to Coast AM.